Well, it's 2 o'clock, and we've got a full house. Good afternoon to all of you, and thank you for coming today on a rainy day. I was afraid if it was sunny, people would be just heading to the beach, but this is good. My name is Karen Carson, and I'd like to welcome you all on behalf of the Salt Spring Trail and Nature Club. And before I begin, I would like to state that our club acknowledges the unceded territory and ancestors of Salt Spring Island, the coastal Salish First Nation peoples of Salt Spring and the surrounding areas who continue to use and steward these lands. This presentation is going to be recorded and will later be available on the library website if you're wanting to review it or share with your friends. And I'd like to ask you if you will turn off your cell phones, please. Before we have our speaker introduced, I'd like to give a welcome to a new member of our executive. He's away on vacation right now. His name is David Cater, and he's been on Salt Spring for a few years, but he comes with a lot of experience to our group from a Burnaby hiking group, and I think that's going to be a very valuable asset. And Marguerite Verz, she's been doing an excellent job of heightening our club's profile and
maybe I shouldn't be
and doing publicity. And I think the majority of you have responded because of the avenues of which Marguerite has displayed our club. I'd like you to come and introduce our guest speaker now, please, Marguerite.
Thank you, Karen. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Amazing. I think we're at capacity. So, Chris, we should charge $10 a person, right? You'd be rich. I'm thrilled to be able to introduce Chris Arnett, who is a well-known Salt Springer. Maybe many of you have heard him in many other talks that he conducts in the library. He's also the author of a book, of several books, but my favorite is A Terror of the Coast, placed in the 1850s about the conflict with settlers and First Nations. And I think a lot of that information will be in his talk today. Chris is not only an archaeologist with a PhD in archaeology, he's also a historian, which helps to put the archaeological information that he knows into human context. So I discovered when I interviewed him for a little write-up in the Driftwood, I wasn't quite sure how interested I would be in place names of the Salish Sea, but when he started talking, I was absolutely fascinated. He's a great storyteller, was a Maori father and a British mother. That's maybe not a surprise. So I'm looking forward to hearing all the information that he's going to share with us today. And please welcome Chris. Thank you. And you're talking loud enough.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Marguerite. And that's a British Norwegian mother, because if she heard that, she'd want to correct it. Anyway, it's great to be here. Thanks for all coming out. I knew when the rain happened that to get a better crowd, so that's good. And I'd like to thank the Salt Spring Island Public Library for hosting this, and the Salt Spring Island Trail and Nature Club for inviting me. You know, months ago, we talked about this with Michelle Gagnon about giving this talk, and it's really fun to see it finally kind of happen. So my talk's going to be about place names of Salt Spring Island, and I've always been interested in place names. It was my introduction to Indigenous history growing up in West Vancouver area, because I have intergenerational connections to Vancouver, and I was very interested in the European side, but I wanted to know about the First Nations side more, and I didn't. It was a time, you know, in the 70s, 80s, not many people were interested in First Nations stuff, so I looked around and found a big list of place names and descriptions of the area where I lived, and it literally created a whole new world in front of my eyes as I learned the indigenous names for familiar places like Kitts Beach and English Bay and all these places in Stanley Park. So it was really an eye-opener, and I've been sort of a fan of this method ever since. You know, wherever you go, you learn about the place names, you learn about the history. So I'm going to talk about place names in Salt Spring, and I'm going to talk about indigenous place names and the place names of the colonial period, which replaced a lot of these names. Well, I shouldn't say they replaced them. They coexist, because a lot of these names are still in use amongst indigenous people and increasingly non-indigenous. So as most of you are well aware, I hope, we live in the ancestral territories of Hulkamitnam and Sinchakum speaking people. And Salt Spring Island is the largest of the Gulf Islands, and in pre-contact times had the largest indigenous populations. This is very obvious from an archaeological point of view. There's probably evidence of 17 winter villages on Salt Spring Island that were occupied over who knows what period of time. We know the oldest radiocarbon dates on the island date back 4,000 years, but there's other archaeological evidence, artifacts that suggest people have been living here for 8,000 years. And why were place names important to Hulkamitnam and Sinchakum people, and why are they important to these people? Well, they're important because place names give you the history of the place, literally, and these things can include historical events. They can include resources. They can refer to how the land is shaped. A myriad of things. And so once these places were named, over the thousands of years that people lived here and experienced the land itself becomes a book, a teaching device, an educational device for the people. So you can imagine if you were touring across the countryside here in a canoe along the shore with your grandparents, they would point out places along the shore, bays, rock features, cliffs, mountains, points of land, and give you the name of the place, and along with the name you get the story, and along with the story you get the cultural teachings. Like, it's all a parcel in there. So it was, as you use the land and travel through it, you'd learn the history of the place, and everybody knew it. It was accessible to everybody. I mean, there were certain places that were secretive, but most of the major geographical features were, the prominent ones, were well known to everyone and named and were associated with various stories. So in the past, there would have been hundreds of place names because people were using this land, Salt Spring Island, largest island, largest pre-contact populations. But with the epidemics in the late 18th century, smallpox particularly, estimates of up to 90% of the people in this area perished. So you can imagine the impact on people. 9 out of 10 people were dead within a few weeks. And so this had a big impact on the demography here and a lot of the knowledge of the landscape, because a lot of the intergenerational knowledge was lost. And then in the wake of the epidemic, settlers started to come in, and there was a lot of displacement. So as people got alienated from the land, there was a loss of knowledge of specific places and smaller places. But a lot of the important places, the names are still remembered to this day and used. These are two great sources. If you want to read more about indigenous place names on Salt Spring, I'm not going to talk about all of them, because there's about 30 or so that I know. But this publication is from Cowichan Tribes, still available, lists about 11 or so, seven, or maybe 17 place names that are all published and public. And this is from Dave Elliott's marvelous book, the late Dave Elliott's book, Saltwater People, which has a great collection of place names, not just for Salt Spring, but for the entire Salish, or the entire Gulf Island area. And you can see in these two maps, the Hulkamitnam place names predominate north and south, whereas Saanich, Sinchakum names predominate or are limited to the southern part of the island. And this just relates to the proximity of the major winter villages of the Saanich and their former villages in Fulford and in Ganges. And just the proximity. In the same way, the proximity of most of Salt Spring Island to places like Cowichan Bay, Maple Bay, Halalt, Chenanus River, and Penelope Island reflect the proximity of the majority of the island's mass to the Hulkaminam speaking people. But these people intermarried. The borders between the groups were not hard and fast. The languages are different. There's a lot of similar words. A lot of the place names, and we can see the different spelling methods that the Senchotfen use, Dave Elliott system, as opposed to the Hulkaminam orthography, a little different, but the names are often the same, have the same meaning when it comes to the place names that we'll be looking at today.
Can you give us an example? Same meaning of different.
Well, just for example, Kwinetnets, which is the name for Fulford Harbor, Kwinetnets, same pronunciation in Senchotfen or in Hulkaminam, So today, I mean, people like to pair the names together, and I think it's more of it's an important political statement as opposed to really utility, because I think they're both it's the same pronunciation. So I'm going to look at about 11 place names on Salt Spring Island, starting from north to south. I'm just selected because there's some names I can't share, and there's other names that I mean, just one at a time, 30 place names. So this is the north end of the island, study point, and Pleklum, very important name, because that's the name for Salt Spring, or for the Salt Spring, or for that area. It means salt. And Spalan is the name for Vesuvius. No one knows the name, what Spalan means. Some of these names are so old, or the people that knew the meaning of the names aren't around to let us know. So we're going to look at Pukunup. Now, Pukunup. The P's kind of... No, anyway. There's a P there. Stubbed over. Anyway, Pukunup. So this is a very important place, and it's been commemorated recently in the new sign that's up at Fernwood, commemorating Penelope use of the island. You talk to Penelope elders, they all talk about this place. And the village of Penelope is right up here. And so you can see the proximity. Puk means white. Unup means ground. So it's white ground. And it's a descriptive name for this place because of the thousands of years of shellfish harvesting that took place here, enough to build up an artificial midden of shell with a village site on it. And the village site stood on this the spit here and enclosed an area, an estuary. But in recent years, it was filled in by a property owner and kind of messed up a bit. But parts of it are still intact. But this place, if you come from Pieper Island or Penelope Island in a canoe or a kayak, it stands out. Like you can see it from miles away. It's this white beach. I'm sure those of you who have been out there have noticed the same thing. So it's like a landmark, a beacon to the island. And as I said, it's very popular for butter clams. And I think it's still loaded with clams at this site. And it was a village site as well.
Do you know Mike Hollis?
Yes.
He's the one that filled all that in.
I know. And found a lot of stuff, including burials that people were selling for 50 cents a bag in the 60s. But anyway, that's what happens sometimes when people don't have knowledge about these places. Anyway, so put that up, very important food gathering area. But these place names don't just describe resources and food. They also, when you have the insider or the cultural knowledge, they're associated with other things like supernatural events, shwame, origin stories, and this is the wild woman of the woods, the Hotlets, lived here at Pukunup. One version, but if you travel through the Coast Salish world, you'll find all kinds of places where Tsuchotlis lived. This is a story about a woman who kidnaps children, puts them in her basket, and takes them back to her cave and roasts them. A cannibal woman, a bad thing, right? And her sister, Kwakmetsen, there's a village in the Cowichan Delta named after her. She was a hunchback, that's what that name means. She was tired of this and killed her sister by pushing her into the oven. And here she's burning up in flames, and the ashes from her body became pine siskins. So this story, it has, you know, it's lots of teachings in it. I mean, there's one like don't go out at night sort of stuff, but it's also about the reality of evil in the world. And so these stories, they seem like children's stories to us, and in a way they are children's stories because children were taught at a very early age. There's a really cool Salish word called shnawayosh, which means literally to put the thought in a child's head. Shnawayosh is the word for cultural teachings. So these stories were taught at a very early age, actually, you know, interuterine. And so you grew up with these stories, you understood the teachings, and you would know the places where these events occurred. So, you know, Granddad would talk about this as you went by. You'd talk about Puklanup, they'd go there and dig clams, visit relatives, but they'd also know about this story. So that's just one place. And there's a lot more I could say about Puklanup, but I got a lot to cover here. Huitlaislam. This is the site of the one of the major salt springs on private property, in the Fernwood area. And Huitlaislam, sometimes you'll see it spelled Huitlaislam, which just means salt, but Huitlaislam means place of salt. So you sometimes see the two spellings. And this area refers to the salt springs, but it also kind of refers in a general area to the north end. And it also refers to St. Mary's Lake. So St. Mary's Lake is sometimes called Huitlaislam or Huitlaislam. And but you don't hear much about St. Mary's Lake because it's Hatsa, which is a sacred kind of lake. So people will not divulge all the practices associated with that lake. But you know when people don't talk about it that it's important stuff or sacred. So Huitlaislam, and of course this name is important to us because it to us today. This is the name, you know, this gave us the name Salt Spring Island. So Salt Spring is kind of unique, you know, with Penelakut and Lummi Island in being one of the only islands in the Salish Sea, three islands that have some connection to their indigenous name or one of the names. So Huitlaislam, really important place. And there's other places up there we don't talk about. I'm going to talk about now the center part of the island. And again, it's chopped off. Sorry about that. But this is Totmol, and this is Tatmol. So Totmol is the Hulkamitna name, and I've seen some shots and maps that have this name, for the waters of Booth Bay and Sansom Narrows area. And it means lukewarm, and refers, yeah, to the warm waters. Tatmol means a little less than warm. So you put some that here, it's not that warm. But this place is warm. And I remember going to Bob Rush's place there. He invited me to his place on the bay, and the water is in the 70s. 70-degree water here. As you know, you go swimming around Vesuvius. So this was recognized by indigenous people, and so they named the place after the this environmental aspect. But I've also seen the word Totmol referred to, or Mount Erskine referred to as Totmol too. So that name may also apply to Mount Erskine, so I'm not sure. But for you hikers, you know, that's a very popular trail. Next time you go up to the top of Erskine or Totmol, you're looking right down on Totmol, and then over to the left is Tatmol, a little less warm. But this is one of the most important, interesting areas of the island that we're going to look at next. And the other place name, I'll mention it because I'm not going to go into detail, Stout, that's the name for Long Harbor. Stout is a halibut, and in the Gulf Islands in the old days, maybe today, I haven't really looked into it, there used to be a lot of halibut, and this place had a particular connection to halibut, and I talked to an elder who told me that there was an image in the rock here, not a cultural image or a carved image, but a natural image of a halibut. And I'm always looking for it and haven't seen it, but you know sandstone, right? So I urge you, any kayakers around here, keep an eye on the rock formations on this side. You might see the stop. But I'm going to talk now about Huitlaislam, which is the end of Booth Canal, where it's, the end of the head of Booth Canal. Now this was I'll just go back, the entrance or the exit for an overland canoe route that connected Booth Canal to Ganges Harbor. So some groups referred to the entrance of this overland canoe route as Huitlaislam, And that's a cool name because there's a clip which right away tells you it's a place of Sebla'am. And what's Sebla'am? These are fir poles where the bark's been stripped off and they've been laid down so you can drag your canoes over the high pieces of land between the head of Booth Canal and Ganges Harbor. And was probably the area where they really laid down these logs was up right around Atkins Road, I think. It was the only real steep part in this whole route. It's pretty flat the whole way. And during the colonial period, there was even talk of putting a canal through there. Wouldn't that be something? So Huitfeclam, a name that refers to place of the cedar or the fir stripped poles where you drag the canoes. There's lots of cultural knowledge. And so that was up here. And then the canoe went down this way overland to Shiok. And this is the two versions. The upper one's the Hulkamitnam spelling. Again, the T should be here. And Shiok, which is the Saanich. And this place is very important to both groups. The Sanchothan speaking people have a very deep ancestral connection to Shiok. And the Hulkamitnam people certainly had a very strong historical connection to it. So where does this term come from? This is, it marks a village site. The village of Chote stood along here, stood along Fulford Ganges Road, along the spit, Centennial Park's right here, now everything's been filled in. But this is the major village, it's all along here. And the Grace Point and Grace Islet was a burial area. This whole area is a burial area, all on this side, which you often find adjacent to any old winter village. So where does this name come from? I've interviewed elders about it, and they know what the name means. It means to be cautious of something. And that's from the root here. It's kia. You almost could hear that even as an English speaker, you know. Kia. So they do this. And you go, kia. And hut means it. So be cautious of it. And some elders talked about the exposure of Ganges Harbor to winds and stuff. But I came across an account that was published in the 30s by a Hulkamitnam elder from the Duncan area. And she talked about a shinoki, two-headed snake that lived in the head of the harbor right up here in front of Moby's. And the shinoki is a very powerful supernatural being. It can give you incredible powers or it can destroy you. It's kind of like electricity of some, can be beneficial or totally harmful.